The ravaging of Africa has been enriching Europe and North America for more than 500 years.
First, European empires imposed slavery and colonialism on the continent.
After 1945, the United States took over as the dominant neo-colonial power.
Through the Pentagon and the CIA, the U.S. government has fueled 14 wars in Africa with arms transfers and military training.
It is American invasion, but the U.S. role is everything.
The U.S. has used the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to systematically demolish African economies and health and education sectors.
Par les stratégies de la Banque mondiale, les pauvres seront toujours pauvres, les riches seront toujours riches.
This military and economic war enables the looting of Africa's resources by Western multinational corporations.
Shell is into the politics of Nigeria, you know. One might say we have our independence, but economically, we are still being colonized.
Washington's genocidal imperial strategy has killed more than 26 million Africans, but failed to suppress popular resistance.
We have refused to die. We are living for Africa. No matter what they do, no matter what power they have.
You are listening to The Ravaging of Africa, a four-part documentary series about the destructive impact of U.S. imperialism on the continent. I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
Voices and sounds in this series were recorded at the 2007 World Social Forum held in Nairobi, Kenya.
This is African Resistance, the fourth and final episode in our series. For the next half hour, we celebrate diverse African struggles against imperialism. We highlight voices from Mozambique, the Congo, Somalia, South Africa, Benin, and Kenya. Stay tuned.
We social movements from across Africa and across the world have come together here in Nairobi at the 2007 World Social Forum to highlight and celebrate Africa and her social movements. Africa and her unbroken history of struggle against foreign domination, colonialism and neocolonialism.
That was Kenyan activist Wahu Kara at the 2007 World Social Forum held in Nairobi, Kenya. More than 500 years of slavery, colonialism, and neocolonialism have not been able to suppress the African spirit of resistance.
Africa has produced inspiring anti-imperialist leaders and thinkers, including Patrice Lumumba, Kwame Nkrumah, Samora Machel, Thomas Sankara, Stephen Biko, and Julius Nyerere. Lumumba, the Congo's first elected prime minister, wanted to take his country in a socialist direction. His murder was arranged by the CIA in 1961.
Hailed as Africa's brightest star, Ghana's President Nkrumah called for an anti-imperialist pan-African organization and non-alignment in the Cold War. He was overthrown in a CIA-backed military coup in 1966. Burkina Faso's President Sankara refused to pay his country's debt. He was overthrown and assassinated in a military coup in 1986. These heroes would not compromise with U.S. imperialism and capitalism and had to be killed or removed by Washington.
U.S. imperial strategies have been defeated by fierce military resistance in southern Africa, and the fight continues in the Congo and Somalia today. In 1988, Angolan and Cuban troops defeated apartheid South Africa's military at the crucial Battle of Cuito Caneval, a town in the south of Angola. With U.S. support, South Africa had invaded Angola in 1975 to prevent the left-wing government of the Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, from taking power. Cuba sent troops in 1975 to fight with the MPLA. The Angolan-Cuban victory led to the liberation of four countries from the domination of the South African apartheid regime: Angola, Mozambique, Namibia, and South Africa itself. South Africa attacked Mozambique as well, which also had a left-wing party in power, Frelimo. The MPLA and Frelimo collaborated in the fight against the apartheid forces. In 1975, Angola and Mozambique had just emerged from 465 years of brutal Portuguese colonial rule.
Amade Suka is from Mozambique. He works for the Center for Developmental Social Studies in Maputo and is a member of the Mozambican Social Forum.
Yeah, Mozambique has, as you know, to have our independence, we had to fight. We have to form a liberation movement to fight the colonialists, the Portuguese colonialists that they were dominating the country. And after that, we had the regime of South Africa, the apartheid regime of South Africa, that also was against the policy that Mozambique took, because Mozambique was a socialist-oriented, took the socialist orientation approach. So that wasn't good for U.S. And U.S., through South Africa, they were able also to create a sort of destabilization in the country. So during the war between Angola and South Africa, when the South African invaded Angola through Namibia, Mozambique played an important role, helping the Angolans also in the process of the struggle. The fight was happening in Mozambique. It was another way of weakening the enemy, because then the South African, they had to fight with the Mozambican border and also the Angolan through the Namibian border. So it was difficult for South Africans to have at the same time two fronts line.
In Mozambique, the U.S., through South Africa, backed a group called RENAMO, a vicious armed engine of destruction created by the intelligence service of racist Rhodesia. RENAMO committed massive atrocities against civilians in a 16-year-long war with Frelimo. The war killed 1 million people.
The RENAMO was just to destabilize the country because of the system the country adopted. And that system was not the one that the U.S. was apology of. They were afraid in terms of hegemony, in terms of controlling the world. They felt that Mozambique was being lost, and was being lost at that time for Russia. So they wanted to destabilize the country so that they could bring back the country for themselves. So that was the scenario at that time of the Cold War. The way they were acting, it was exactly to burn houses, I mean to block roads and to kidnap people, this kind of things. The idea was exactly to make sure that the country suffers.
Mozambique also helped the African National Congress, ANC, in South Africa, which was fighting against the apartheid regime. There were ANC bases within Mozambique.
Mozambique supported the INC comrades and activists in the country. We had three times the South Africans that they came to Mozambique, to a region called Matola and another region called Bairro Central. So they went to those the area, and then they had the riots on that during the night. So indeed we had South African attacking Mozambique in specific areas.
Though it killed 1 million people in Mozambique and 500,000 in Angola, the United States failed to achieve its objective of overthrowing the Frelimo and MPLA governments. The South African army was resoundingly defeated by Angola and Cuba at the Battle of Quito Carnaval, leading to the liberation of all of Southern Africa.
The massive moment was exactly at the Quito Carnaval, when the Angolans, they defeated the South African. It was when they smashed them, and then it was concluded that, you know, you cannot go further.
The key to this victory was unity and collaboration between Angola, Mozambique, the ANC, and the Namibian liberation movement, SWAPO, combined with the crucial international solidarity shown by Cuba.
I think the major secret is exactly the unity. Yeah, there was a strong revolution unity. There was a strong solidarity among the liberation movement in all Southern Africa. Most of the African leaders during the liberation movement, they met in countries like Tanzania, like in Algeria, and they formed a group And then they decided, they were convinced that it was time to stop colonization. It was time to liberate the countries. And then all of them, they were working together. They were thinking on the same way. They were sure which way they should go. They had their systems of information and of supporting each other, that it was able, even if somebody would come and try to betray one group from another, he didn't find space, because the unity among the African was so strong that, I mean, something was in front of them. It was liberation. It was freedom. It was to have back their land. It was to have the black people, the African people, liberated from the colonization. And that was the key element, unity and solidarity. The Cubans, they also supported our struggle. Yes, it's extremely important, not in the past only, but even today. The Cuban, they inspire us. The Cuban, they show us that it's possible to build another world. It's possible to build a world of solidarity, of unity, a world without hunger, a world with the technology, a world without health problem. In the system that they've adopted, the socialism in Cuba, allowed Cuba, it's one of the most it's one of the countries with the most developed system of health. Cuba, it's really an example that we did follow and we will continue to follow.
The aggression of the Bush regime has globalized resistance to the U.S.
The world has recognized what U.S. wants. And the mass of all of the world are coming together to say no to the way the U.S. is conducting, the way the U.S. is behaving. When I say U.S., I'm saying Bush administration, the way they are leading their foreign policy. Everybody now hates U.S. Everybody now march. Everybody condemn, you know, the U.S. imperialist approach on how they're doing things.
As with Southern Africa, the U.S. has also failed to achieve its military objectives in the case of the Congo and Somalia. U.S. plans to divide both countries have been defeated by determined African resistance. Mfuni Kazadi from the Congo is organizing a war crimes tribunal to try the U.S. and the multinational companies that have facilitated the Congo war.
So we are going to present the War Tribunal of Africa in a way not only to judge Rwanda, Uganda, because they were only the puppets, but also to look the multinational, the power who have enabled the Rwandese to come and invade Congo, to loot his resources, to kill about 2 million people.
Farah Malam is Somali and Kenyan. He is chair of Kenya's third largest political party, Forward People. He describes the Somali spirit to explain why the U.S. will never get the country's oil.
They're so nationalistic. They're so nationalistic. They're so passionate and aggressive about their own independence. This is the other thing that Americans and the West needs to know. I mean, I don't know why the British are not advising the Americans, because the British were the former colonizers of the Italians, and they know what the Somali mind is and the Somali psyche is. You can never have the better side of them when it comes to their own country. As it is right now, they will invade the Ethiopians at night, and in the day when the American jets are taking off, they will go back to the forest where they are.
The African spirit of resistance has also been expressed in many non-military ways. The 2007 World Social Forum, WSF, was held in Nairobi and brought together 60,000 people from all over Africa and the world. These included participant groups from the continent fighting for the rights of the landless and slum residents, for environmental justice, women's rights, labor rights, reparations, food security and fair trade, and against Western oil and mining companies, the World Bank and the IMF, privatization, the debt, trade liberalization, free trade, patriarchy, AIDS, child labor, and the looting of African wealth by Western corporations. The WSF provided a significant opportunity for building pan-African and international solidarity, which were the keys to success in the liberation of Southern Africa. An important initiative emerging from the forum that resulted from such cross-border collaboration was the African Water Network.
The African Water Network was set up by the Ghana Coalition Against Privatization of Water, the South African Coalition Against Water Privatization, the Council of Canadians, and the UK-based World Development Movement, amongst others. More than 250 activists representing organizations and social movements from over 40 African countries committed to actively support this network during a historic session at the World Social Forum. The African Water Network aims to strengthen cooperation in opposing World Bank-enforced water privatization in all its forms and to work for public control over water as a fundamental human right.
Virginia Sitshedi from the South African Coalition Against Water Privatization explained the significance of the event by saying, "Today we celebrate the birth of this network to resist the theft of our water. Tomorrow we will celebrate access to clean water for all." She elaborates further.
The struggle against privatization or rather commercialization and commodification of public services is very legitimate, and it's something that we need to do and continue doing and gain more support from different parts of the world in order to be able to win the struggle.
Part of the water services of Johannesburg are provided by the French multinational Suez Lyonnais.
In Johannesburg specifically, Suez is involved in the water management, and so the Johannesburg Water Company, which is a local government company, becomes a subsidiary of Suez. So what they do in order to make sure that people pay for water and they are able to make their profits, they install prepaid water meters, which is the meters that says you can only have access to water only if you have money. And that is problematic for the poor, given the state of the poor in our country, as well as the unemployment rate and the sick who are dying of HIV/AIDS, which is very high in South Africa.
Water privatization means increased poverty.
It's increasing poverty, and it's also increasing violation of human rights, because if you don't have water, you don't have life, and you don't have access to, or you don't live in an healthy environment. And healthy environment is essential for human dignity as well. Hence we have, you know, organizations like the Coalition Against Water Privatization, as well as the Anti-Privatization Forum, which is a coalition of different community-based organizations. We are challenging this. And, you know, sometimes we don't win, but they feel our pressure because some of their projects are supposed to be finalized and all that. So we're just disturbing and, you know, the whole process through our resistance. And the resistance is done, you know, through marches, protests, demonstrations, and some defiance campaigns of just taking off these meters, but connect people to water. And hence we have a slogan that says, "Destroy the meter, enjoy free water."
Virginia Sachedi and other African resistors who had come to the Nairobi WSF from all over the continent to build solidarity with each other spoke of their vision for Africa.
There's always this saying that Africa is poor. But we all know for Africa is very rich of its minerals. So Africa is not poor, it's just made poor. So my vision is to see, you know, all the countries and the corporations that are benefiting from Africa paying back, you know, what they've taken out from our countries. That's why I support the struggle for reparations and making sure that this debt that we are made to pay over and over again is cancelled, because we've paid more than what we owe. And frankly, who do we owe and what do we owe? Instead, these people, they owe us lives, because they've taken our lives away through slavery, through colonization, through apartheid, and now it's this economic apartheid of, you know, the poor getting poorer, while the rich getting richer.
And what is this?
These things are happening through all these companies coming and, you know, ruling our countries and all that. And the best thing is for our government to be able to stand on their own. And instead of consulting the US, but consult its people and make sure that we control our countries and its policies and not adhere to the neoliberal agenda that is ruling the whole world, which and the imperial agenda that comes from the Americans. And build our resources within our countries and develop them and make sure that they benefit the people of their country rather than being taken away from us to other countries.
Emily Achaka is president of the non-governmental organization Circle for the Promotion of Sustainable Development, based in Benin, where World Bank and IMF structural adjustment programs have created massive poverty.
Nous ne voulons plus d'eux dans notre pays. Nous ne voulons plus nous laisser en paix. Et nous voulons vraiment.
We don't want the IMF and the World Bank here. We want them to leave us alone.
Au Bénin, aujourd'hui, des mouvements de base ont commencé par s'organiser, qui a commencé de lutter par rapport à ça depuis des années.
In Benin today, grassroots organizations have begun to organize themselves to fight structural adjustment. Our organization started fighting many years ago.
Le 19 septembre passé, en commun accord avec le CRDTM, on avait prévu de faire sitting devant la Banque mondiale pour leur dire les quatre vérités, ce qui se passe, ce qui ne va pas au niveau des pays africains et ce que nous voulons au niveau des pays africains. Donc on a dû le faire, on a rassemblé des milliers de personnes devant la structure internationale de la Banque mondiale.
In September last year, we demonstrated in front of the IMF offices to voice our demands. We were able to assemble thousands of people.
Je veux voir un autre Afrique juste. Et par rapport à ça, je dis qu'un autre Afrique est possible. Un autre Afrique juste est possible. Parce que l'Afrique dans laquelle je vis aujourd'hui, il y a trop d'injustices. Et par les stratégies de la Banque mondiale, les pauvres seront toujours pauvres, les riches seront toujours riches. Et je me battrai, je vais lutter jusqu'à la fin de ma mort pour que je puisse avoir un autre Afrique juste. Et là, même si je n'ai pas la chance d'avoir un autre Afrique possible dans la génération actuelle dans laquelle je fais partie, je suis sûre que les arrière-fils auront la chance d'avoir un autre Afrique plus juste et vivront en paix.
I want to see a just Africa. A just Africa is possible because in the Africa where I live, there are too many injustices. With the strategies of the World Bank, the poor will always be poor and the rich will always be rich. I will fight until I die so I can have a just Africa. Even if I don't have a chance to see it in this generation, I'm sure that our children's children will be able to have a just Africa where they can live in peace.
Njero Munye has lived in Korogocho, one of Nairobi's slums, for 25 years. He is a community mobilizer and has set up a radio station called Coach FM in Korogocho.
For us to be in a slum, it is not as a result of maybe us not being hard workers. We work very hard. But what about those who are up there, the decision makers, the politicians? Do they ever reason about, do they ever think of a person who lives in an informal settlement? They rarely do. We have to change that. And I think Coach FM is one of the tools that we have used. We have the resources. Let's have equitable distribution of the resources that we have. This is Burning Spear, is a reggae artist, who said that there is enough for all. But one man wants it all for himself. Why do you want to take everything for yourself? Why? Just because you're in a leadership. For any oppression to take place, it's we the people, we accept that. You can resist even if you're alone. So we should resist any kind of oppression, any kind of exploitation at any level. If Africa can be united, we have everything. We have what it takes to move the economy. We have what it takes to sustain our own people. And that is it. We can unite, be one, resist any kind of oppression, aggression from anywhere, even from within the African countries. We'll be one.
Farah Malam.
Africa needs to have a common purpose, first of all. The common purpose should be the empowerment and the welfare of its own people, period. That can only come about if there is a fair system that's in place. I would like to see an African continent where the resources of Africa is for the Africans themselves, not for foreigners and outsiders for that matter, where it trades and deals with the rest of the world, because it's a global village, but on a fair terms, not on terms that are essentially lopsided and one-sided, that maintains the African continent as perpetually poor and starving, and the kind of pictures that you see when it sits on the biggest reserves of wealth in the world. I don't think the West will allow Africa to have its own democratic process to choose the leaders that will deliver it, because the West has a lot to lose in that. The West wants cheaper, what do you call, mineral resources and control Africa and of time. I think give due credit to George Bush. You could say he's childish in his way, in his outlook, that he's not a brilliant guy. Yes, he's mediocre in his own right. But what the other Western leaders, American and European leaders in the past, would caught with sugar and the rest of it and take you many years to understand, he bared it all. No, everybody sees now the true colors, the naked colors of what the West stood for all these years. Yes.
Africa and this region is the cradle of humanity. We come here again to give back to the world that we want. A world that we are going, all of us, to own and possess. A world that is going to be inclusive. A world that will destroy the conspiracies of divide and rule. A world that is going to say no to profit. A world that is going to say no to commodification of our common goods like water. No matter what power they have, this time around, the World Social Forum has given us an opportunity to make a linkage with the others all over the world who are saying enough is enough.
You have been listening to African Resistance, the final episode of the documentary series, The Ravaging of Africa.
The Ravaging of Africa is dedicated to the memory of Patrice Lumumba.
This series was written by Asad Ismi and produced by Kristen Schwartz. Go to www.asadismi.ws. That's www.asadismi.ws for more information or to download the series.
Translation by Maziar Mahajir at Toronto Conversation Corner and Farid Omar. Voiceover by Benedicta Madavo.
Theme music is Ner Balankina by Captain Yaba from Ghana. On this episode, you also heard Mahanhela by Mabulu from Mozambique and singing by the Kenyan community organization, the Daughters of Mumbi.
The series was funded by Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 3903, QP National, Canadian Union of Postal Workers National, GovW North Bay Local, Canadian Labour Congress, Public Service Alliance of Canada, Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association, Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and Mining Watch Canada.
Thank you for listening.